line, center field, base hit. Here's Soler. Here's the Shields throw, and it's cut off immediately. That ball was cut off before it even got to the infield dirt. And Bubba Starling down in the count comes through, and the Royals lead 2-1.
Bubba Starling with a big hit. I believe they said it was the first hit since August 4th of last year. It's this year. Okay, August 4th this year. I don't know, man. It's been a while.
Might feel like it.
It sure feels like it. Bubba Starling with the RBI single. That gave the Royals the lead last night. And the Royals, Brad Keller, we said it would be a pitcher's duel. Brad Keller, 6 2/3, gave up 3 hits, walked 1, gave up just 1 run, struck out 4, lowers the ERA 1.93. Shane Bieber, the leading candidate for the American League Cy Young Award, he went 6 scoreless last night, so Royals couldn't do anything to him. So Keller left down 1-0, but the Royals were able to battle back, scored 2 in the bottom of the 8th. Mikhail Franco and Bubba Starling with the RBI singles. You heard Starling with a game winner in the bottom of the 8th, and Greg Holland gets the save. He was on the trading block, but he stays with the Royals. Trade deadline was yesterday. Holland with his second save, his first as a Royal since 2000, and I think it was 15, early in 15. So the Royals now 14-21, back in action. Coming up tonight, 7:05, Matt Harvey versus Zach Plesac. And here's Mike Matheny on his ace, Brad Keller.
This guy's wired as a workhorse starting pitcher. I don't think we can have a better guy, to be honest, as you look at this next group that we're already seeing with, you know, with Brady and also with Chris. Here's a guy that's similar in age, but he's advanced. We talked about how advanced they were to be able to get here. This is a guy who now and you know, his third season in the major leagues without even 3 full years. And this is a guy that they can kind of compete with and that's going to push them. That's going to show them what it looks like, one, to be a pro. And two, he's going to make them try and take that role. Brad Keller's absolutely in that conversation, too, as being the leader of this staff.
Once again, Royals back in action tonight. Matt Harvey on the hill. He struggled a little bit with the Royals since being claimed as a reclamation project. Royals and Indians game 2 of that series. Tonight, Major League Baseball trade yesterday. The Padres very, very active. They acquired Mike Clevinger from Cleveland in a 9-player deal. The A's get Mike Minor, former Royal, from the Rangers. The Blue Jays acquire left-hand pitcher Robbie Ray from Arizona. The Marlins made a surprise trade for the D-backs Starling Marte. And the Blue Jays acquire Jonathan Villar from the Marlins. Other notables, Brian Goodwin, who was a Royal for a short period of time. The Reds acquire him and reliever Archie Bradley from the D-backs. Goodwin was with the Angels. And the Cubs acquire outfielder Cameron Maben from the Tigers. And the Red Sox send outfielder Kevin Pillar to the Rockies. There's a few. And then the Mets get a catcher, Robinson Chirinos, and infielder Todd Frazier from the Rangers. And Frazier was with the Mets just last year, so they reacquired him. But no major deals other than the Clevinger deal is a pretty big deal. And, of course, the day before, the Padres got Trevor Rosenthal. The Padres have made some serious – they've been moving around and making a lot of deals and add a lot of different spots. They got a designated hitter the other day, Mitch Moreland from the Red Sox. They got Rosenthal in their bullpen. They got Clevinger, who's under contract, so he's not a rental for their rotation. The Padres are all in, apparently. They're all in. A lot of other contenders really stood pat. White Sox picked up Jerod Dyson. The Blue Jays were very active, as we mentioned. The Red Sox traded away some pieces and got some prospects. I think the Royals did good in regards to what they got for Brett Phillips and also Trevor Rosenthal. Ian Kennedy was a trade piece, but then he got hurt with a calf strain, so he's on the IL, so that hurt the Royals there. And then Greg Holland, they just really didn't get a good deal. And here, CBS Sports says the Royals are a loser. Okay. They kept fellow reclamation project Greg Holland. Didn't seem to consider a Whit Merrifield trade again and didn't capitalize on a weak starting pitching market by peddling Danny Duffy or Brad Keller or Jacob Junis. Why would you trade Brad Keller?
That makes zero sense.
Danny Duffy, maybe. Jacob Junis, probably not.
No.
Brad Keller?
Not right now.
Those two? I mean, Junis you ain't going to get nothing for. And Whit Merrifield is your best player. And if you think you're going to be a lot better next year... this is why the National Writers...
don't trade Whit in a 60-game season.
No. You'd have to get so much.
Yeah.
I don't know what this guy... You know, it's just, hey, it's the Royals, so let's knock them because they're a small market team. That's how I... That's just insane. You do know Brad Keller's 25, right, dude, and under contract, and was a real 5 pickup. He's really cheap. Hello. Duh. That's a guy that doesn't do his homework.
Absolutely.
National guy just, you know, throws stuff out to fill a story. We know a lot better than that. All right, local sports. Let's go through this here. The K-Preps football rankings are out. And Eightman 2, St. Francis number 1, Hanover 2, Axtell ranked 3rd, Lebo 4, Victoria 5, Osborne, St. John's Tipton, and Sylvan Lucas and Thunder Ridge all receiving votes, but did not crack the top 5. Osborne, defending state champion. Of course, lost a lot from last year, but I still think they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Canton Galva number 1 and Eightman 1, defending state champs. Leota's number 2, Little River 3, Madison 4, Clifton Clyde is 5. Hill City getting votes, and Hill City will be at Osborne on Katie Kinch 94 and Z96.3 Lake, Simulcast on both stations coming up on Friday. More on that in a moment. 1A rankings, Centralia number 1, the defending champion. Smith Center number 2, runner-up from last year too, Centralia. Conroy Springs ranked 3, Valley Heights 4, and Opie 5. That's Class 1A. And Class 2A, Plainville getting some votes there as well. Class 2A, number 1, Rossville, Nemaw Central 2, Silver Lake 3, Garden Plain 4, Hoisington 5. Beloit getting some votes, as did Norton and Pittsburgh Colgan. 3A, number 1 is Andale. No-brainer there, defending state champs. Perry-Lecompton 2, Topeka Aiden 3, Holton 4. Southeast Saline from the NCAA cracks the top 5. Others getting votes, Chapman, Concordia, Sabathia, Riley County, just to name a few, Wichita Collegiate as well. In regards to Class 4A, Bishop Miege number 1, Stunner, Paola 2, St. James Academy 3, Tonganoxie 4, McPherson 5. And for the rest of those rankings, go to kpreps.com. Volleyball rankings, we know that the Beloit ranked 9th in the rankings. St. John's Tipton was 9th or 10th?
10th.
10th?
Yep.
Yeah, was there anybody else from the area that was
not
ranked?
Not from the immediate area,
okay.
Nope.
The Kansas volleyball rankings are posted at ncksports.com. All right, Dusty, you got any new information to share with us before we talk about the broadcast schedule?
And I just would maybe go over the volleyball schedule for tonight if we
okay,
want to do that.
Go for it.
St. John's Tipton's hosting a triangular tonight with Rock Hills and Natoma. So Rock Hills is going to start their season this evening. And then Chase Triangular, Lincoln starts their season tonight. Chase and Tenskett competing there. Sylvan Lucas, Thunder Ridge, and Southern Cloud at the Sylvan Lucas Triangular here this evening. And then the Smith Center Triangular is tonight as well. Smith Center opens their season with Trigo and Plainville coming into town. And we'll hear from Lakeside Girls Volleyball Coach as they start their season tonight. Michelle Brummett's group there at the Pike Valley Triangular with Osborne and Pike Valley both competing there. So that's tonight's schedule. Full NPL and NCAA schedule can be found at ncksports.com all the time.
All right, so here's our schedule. We got locker room chats tomorrow and Thursday. You want to run through those?
Yeah, well, tomorrow we'll talk with the coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge around 5:10 tomorrow evening. And then on Thursday, with coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas football. So football locker room chats again beginning tomorrow.
All right, and then do you mention Thursday?
Thursday, we'll have volleyball. Yeah,
locker room chats.
Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I'm distracted
here. I was like, wait a second. Thursday. Yes.
All right. So let's work on you and I both listening to each other a little bit better, both of us. All right. So Wednesday and Thursday, locker room chats. All right. Then Thursday, we got a live video stream of volleyball for Beloit. They'll be at Ellsworth, taking on Ellsworth and Ellenwood. Ellsworth at 5, Ellenwood at 6. Live video stream at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. And then Friday, our schedule, Dusty.
Yeah, Friday we'll start with Football Express presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable at 5:40 on our game night coverage. And then, again, we have two games, one of them on live video stream. Beloit at Republic County will be around 6:45 is when they'll go on there with Beloit at Republic County in the NCAA matchup on ncksports.com with the Beloit Trojan channel. And as I mentioned a little bit ago, we'll have simulcast Hill City at Osborne on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 through the lake, as well as online audio at Katy Country 94. A pregame coverage beginning at 6:30 and kickoff at 7 o'clock there. And then we'll conclude our game night coverage with the Katy Country 94 local scoreboard show presented by State Farm Insurance at 10:05. So that's coming up on Friday game night.
All right, we're still low power. I'm extremely frustrated, to say the least.
Yes.
We keep being told week after week that we're going to have it fixed, and then I can't even get into particulars. So anyway, supposedly for the third time, this weekend will be the weekend that we'll get back to snuff. We shall see. So that's why, since we're at low power on Katy Country 94, we're going to have Osborne and Hill City on both the radio stations so that people can listen, whether it's Z or if they can't get D, they can get Z, because Z reaches farther than D right now. Normally that's flip-flopped. But we're low power with the transmitter problems and trying to get that fixed and getting the correct parts and put in and everything else. And then, of course, the Beloit football game is live video stream, ncksports.com. So we have that advantage for us, so we can still have that covered and people can watch and listen to it all at the same time via their smartphones or computers or desktops, laptops, whatever it may be, smart TVs. That's all available to the Trojan fans both Thursday for volleyball and Friday for football. All right, so you had a chance to catch up with another local coach.
Yeah, Michelle Brummett, the coach of the Lakeside Lady Knight volleyball team, as they get ready for the season and have a pretty good group of players returning from last year's 19 and 16 squad, and looking forward to getting things going. Again, they start the season tonight at the Pike Valley Triangular with Osborne and Pike Valley competing against Lakeside as well. And again, Coach Brummett, looking forward to this season, and we'll hear from her here. Welcome back here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. Michelle Brummett joining us, the head volleyball coach of the Lakeside Lady Knights. Coach, first of all, thanks for taking some time here. You've had a chance to get everybody ready to go, and you're starting the season out actually today as you go up to Pike Valley Triangular. And kind of looking at your team so far, you did lose one player off of last year's 19 and 16 team, and that was, as far as a senior, that was Grace Grady. So you do have a lot of returners this year, a couple all-leaguers and Peyton Hake and Bailey Cunningham from last year that are back this season. Just how have practices gone for you so far as you get ready for the 2020 season?
Hey, thanks, Dusty. Yeah, we started the 17th, just like everyone else did. Fortunately, we were able to begin this season. There for a while, there was a lot of doubt. We've kind of hit the normal practice schedule that we normally do every year. Like you said, I have a lot of returners, so they're familiar with our system and our program and how we work and what to expect as far as drills and practice structure. And, you know, the more years we do this, the easier it gets to start each season. So we're fortunate with that.
As you practice, like you said, there were question marks, obviously, at the beginning there, to, if we were going to get the season in or if we're going to have to delay or what might happen. Obviously, with the COVID-19 pandemic, there's different things that you have to do as far as practices are concerned, I'm guessing. What are some of the biggest things that stand out there? And maybe what's the biggest challenge for you as a coach during these times?
Well, the biggest challenge, I think, is kind of taking the camaraderie away from the girls by having to keep them at distance from each other. You know, part of our program is team mating is our number one goal, and with that becomes a lot of celebration huddles, a lot of high fives, and a lot of touching. And I would say that has been by far the hardest thing to take these girls away from.
When you do that, like, did it take a while for them to get used to that, or are they just kind of rolling with the punches? They understand what they need to do to be able to play volleyball this year.
Oh, I think we've done it enough that we want that to become instinctual for them to want to congratulate each other. So yeah, it did at first. When I would call in the end of a drill or something, I'd always make sure I stick out an elbow or something, which was kind of a signal to, hey, remember, we no hands going here, minimal contact. When they come in and set up for practice, we make sure that their gear is separate, at least 6 feet apart, you know, each water bottle and stuff. So it didn't take long for them to kind of remember at the end of each drill that that's what the procedure had to be.
As you get set for this season, as you mentioned, you do have quite a few returners and some veteran players back. When you look at that and see, I guess, around the league where everybody else is at, how do you feel this team kind of stacks up compared to maybe some in the past, and how do you feel you are in the progression of having success here?
I feel like we've got a little bit of an edge with so many returning players. I think at least 8 of my players were at least at one point in the season in a starting role. Mm-hmm. So as our program's built, so has the skills of each girl. And, you know, you get those teams in the past that have had a wonderful senior class and kind of rolled through all of us in the competition. And, you know, eventually those girls graduate, and then it's time for us to have our turn and get to step up and see some benefit of what we've worked so hard the past few years for.
You open out the season, as I mentioned, as we're airing this here on Tuesday. Today, you open with Osborne and Pike Valley up there at the Pike Valley Triangular. I don't know if you know a whole lot about these teams, just probably what you saw from last season. I know Osborne's already had a match, so that always helps them, I think, going into this Triangular. But when you look at the competition here with Pike Valley and Osborne tonight, what do you expect to see?
Well, I think it's what we need to look at is how well we're prepared. And it seems in the past couple years, we've had some nerves and kind of got out to a slow start. We beat ourselves a lot of times with unforced errors. And I think that's what we need to focus on this evening, you know, with it being the first match, get the jitters out. You know, definitely with Osborne already having a match, you know, they may have worked through some of that. And I think once we get through that, that we'll roll pretty well. I think we'll compete with the better part of all of our league, if not everybody, but I have to be able to say the same for those other teams as well. I think with everyone just grateful that we have a season, I think everybody's going to put their whole heart into it and you know, take every big moment they can get. You know, we just don't know if there'll be another match.
Michelle Brummer, the head coach of the Lakeside Volleyball team here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Coach, we thank you for taking the time here and wish you the best of luck as you open out the season tonight and then moving forward, hopefully can get all these games in.
Oh, I agree 100%. Thank you, Dusty.
Michelle Brummett, head coach of the Lakeside Volleyball team, and they're in action tonight. It's fun to start to have regular schedules again.
Yes, I was going to ask her there at the end. I said, "What is it? Is everybody just excited to be able to have games and more amped up this year?" And she answered my question for me. I think everybody is just ready to get out there, and I think they understand how great it is that they even have the chance to play. And I think that's been the case, just talking with all the coaches that we have talked to, is that they're grateful for the opportunity and hoping and crossing our fingers that we can get through it all.
Yeah, but we're all doing that, aren't we?
Yes.
We're all in the same boat on that one.
Yep.
I would imagine. All right, looking forward to it. If you missed any of our interviews, we've had interviews with volleyball coaches, tennis coaches. We got cross-country coaches coming up, right?
Planning on it, yep.
Yep, that's the plan. We hope to talk to another volleyball coach, but that didn't pan out yesterday, but maybe we'll get him on later on this week. Maybe not. We'll find out. But once again, locker room chats tomorrow and Thursday for the football coaches. And as we've had Lakeside Volleyball, St. John's Tipton Volleyball, Beloit Volleyball. We've had Lakeside Football, Beloit Football, and Osborne Football, and Beloit Tennis. That's seven, eight, nine, whatever.
Yeah.
We got all that. So you miss any of that stuff, it's posted at our podcast page, katycountry94.com. Click on the sports ticket. Sorry, doing two things at once here today. It's only going to get busier and crazier the rest of the week.
Yes.
Okay, we move on to KU football. No fans. Is that any different than normal?
That was the joke going around right away.
Yeah.
What does
KU,
that matter?
Did KU actually have to announce that they're not going to be any fans of the KU football game? Isn't that just kind of understood and a given? No, I'm kidding, of course. If anybody wanted to go to the KU football game, you will not be able to on September 12th. KU making that announcement yesterday, reversing course. Of course, that was always subject to change. It could also change for Oklahoma, K-State, anybody for that matter. And it could also change for Nebraska. No, it won't. Because the Big Ten's not going to change anything. Well, maybe they will, but it won't be when they want it to. At least we don't think. But who knows what the Big Ten's going to do. I'm not going to predict, and nothing would surprise or shock me anymore with what the Big Ten and lawsuits and what teams are wanting to do. The Big Ten came out yesterday and said, yeah, we did vote 11-3 and to cancel the fall season, move it to spring. So the Chiefs got money left and right. Lamar Hunt must be invested in Zoom video communications and is cashing in today. If you don't know, Zoom video. Zoom became a word, dude. Like, Zoom was always a word, but now it means something different with the COVID-19 pandemic. Hey, I'm going to set up a Zoom. You going to join me on a Zoom? What time's your Zoom? I hear that all the time around my house, especially when it was at in-home learning, you know, when school was stopped. And I invested a little bit in Zoom, so I'm happy today if I decide to sell anything, although I didn't have a lot in it, and I wish I had a lot more in it because it's up like $150 a share today. So maybe Lamar Hunt's cashing in and saying, you know what? You get it. You know, I think Lamar Hunt might be Oprah Winfrey Jr. Oprah, you get a car. You get a car. You get a car. And then there's Lamar Hunt. You get a contract. You get a contract. You get an extension. I've lost track of how many contracts the Chiefs have given out. I know they gave out $500 million to Patrick Mahomes, although that's not all paid up front. Chris Jones, 80-some million. Let's see, Watkins, $6 million 1 year. Robinson re-signed. Who am I leaving out here? They got a big contract with Clark, but that wasn't this offseason. Pinnell got a different contract.
Yeah.
See, I'm losing them.
Did you say they restructured Watkins? I don't know if you...
Yeah, I did. I did. Okay. One year, I think it was $6 million. They redid that one.
Coach texted me while you were starting.
Yeah,
that,
you're so fine. Well, now, here's the next ones. Chiefs are finalizing new contracts that would keep head coach Andy Reid and general manager Brett Veach in Kansas City through the 2025 season. The team's working on six-year contracts for both Reid and Veach after they helped lead the Chiefs to their first Super Bowl in five decades. Why not? The Chiefs have not confirmed the contract extensions at this time. So Lamar Hunt rewarding everybody. I do have a slight concern with the Chiefs in regards to everybody getting contracts and everybody feeling good about themselves. And I worry about the motivation when everybody is happy. Mm-hmm. When everybody's happy, that worries me. Not in life. That'd be great. It'd be great if everybody was happy. Yeah. Lord knows we'd love to have that today, society, wouldn't we? But in regards to a professional sports team, I want them to be still hungry. I hope they're hungry. They say they're hungry, but we won't know it until they actually play. That you can say all the right things. Every single year, the team that wins the World Series, oh, we're hungry to go back-to-back. And then they go, it just, rarely do you get back. That's what made the Royals run in 14-15 so special. You just don't go back very often, especially a small market team. You usually fall off the face of the earth. You just kind of get worn out, long postseason, shorter offseason. And, you know, NBA is an exception because you've had all these teams have these repeats. You had, you know, the Bulls, the Lakers, the Celtics. You had the Celtics way back in the day, of course. You've got the Warriors, of course, and the Spurs won multiple titles. And, of course, the Cavs have won. Heat won titles. Cavs won one. Warriors won multiple ones. Pistons went back-to-back. So those seem to be able to do it. And the NBA seems to be the easiest to repeat. It's not very easy in the NHL. And the NFL, the Patriots, I know they've done it quite a bit. But when it comes to baseball, it doesn't happen a ton where teams go back to back. So, but the Patriots have been the exception to the rule when it comes to NFL. How many times have we talked about the Super Bowl runner-up falls off the face of the earth the very next year, like the Rams did last year? Mm-hmm. It happens all the time. And so now the question is, will the Chiefs stay at the top? I think they will, but it does concern me when they're getting all this money. I mean, the coach taken care of, the GM, all these players are signed, which is a good thing, don't get me wrong. But I wonder about the motivation and the drive a little bit. They can disprove my thought process by going out and winning it again this year. Time will tell, and hopefully we will have a full season. The NBA playoffs last night, you know, I remember Todd Clover and I having this conversation via text. And when Westbrook, he said, you need to trade Westbrook. Once George was traded, get rid of Westbrook. I agreed with him, even though both those players I really like, and I enjoyed watching them when they were in Thunder uniforms. And we knew Carmelo Anthony would never work when he was in Thunder uniform for a short period of time. It just didn't work, and that was proven correct. And Todd had told me that, you know, the Thunder were going to, you know, now they're going to get lottery picks and this and that, and they're really going to be bad. And everybody just assumed that when Chris Paul was traded, Westbrook for Paul, in essence, Thunder to the Rockets. It was Paul coming to the Thunder, Westbrook going to the Rockets. Everybody just assumed that the Thunder were going to trade Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't. And now Chris Paul's coming up big, and he has been clutch in the fourth quarter. So the Thunder, who couldn't even do anything to the Rockets when they had George and Westbrook, lost in five games. Now, when they don't have Westbrook and they don't have George, and they've got Chris Paul, you know, is just a little, looks like a little chunky 35-year-old point guard, okay? But he's got so much game, and I love his game. He's got old man's game. He's got that mid-range game. He can shoot the three. He is deceptively still quick. Has he put on a little bit of weight? Yeah, but the key is for him, stay healthy. Mm-hmm. And by golly, he's been able to stay healthy this year. And that break with COVID-19 might have been the best thing for him going into the playoffs. And last night, the Thunder, they pushed the Rockets to a Game 7, something that George Westbrook and the Thunder couldn't do, but Chris Paul and all of his cronies can.
Beasley over to an open shooter. It's Paul who got the three. Thunder had a 2-on-1. Schroeder knifing his way to the cup and scores.
Chris Paul, 28 points, 15 in the fourth quarter. He made two free throws with 13 seconds left in the game tied at 100, and Gallinari made two more after a turnover by Russell Westbrook to finish it off. Wasn't that appropriate? I've said all along, and I have nothing against Russell Westbrook because I love how he plays for the most part, but I didn't think Westbrook and the Rockets were a good fit. I didn't think it would work. And the Rockets now are a loss away from being bounced in the first round by the team that Westbrook left, which tells me who's the better team player, Chris Paul or Russell Westbrook?
There's no question.
I don't think there is any question. And that's why the Rockets, why did they trade Chris Paul? They had him. Because Paul and Harden didn't get along. That's what it was.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, if Harden wouldn't have had it, could have checked his ego at the door a little bit. Mm-hmm. And now Harden thinks, well, him and Westbrook will do better because Westbrook's younger. And it'd be so hilarious, in my opinion, if the Thunder beat the Rockets. And I think we both said the Thunder in 7. We were thinking with our heart instead of our head. Didn't you say the Thunder? I think I said the Thunder in seven.
I definitely wasn't thinking with my heart because I don't really care about the Thunder.
You said Thunder in seven, and I think I agreed with you.
Yeah.
And I think I was thinking with my heart instead of my head.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know, man.
I'm a Thunder fan.
It's wishful thinking is what I was thinking, but I'll go with it.
My thing is Houston.
They live and die by the three.
Again, and just like we've always talked about with them, are they going to play defense when they need to in like the critical times?
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes they have, but it's not a consistent thing. And I've always felt like Russell Westbrook and James Harden on the same team, whether they get along or not, is a ticking time bomb.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
There's only one ball and that much ego.
Well, I mean, Houston cruised in the first two games without Westbrook. Then they lost two. And it was like, Russell's going to save the day. Gave him some energy. Won game five. Blew him out. I think that was more about the break with the protest and everything that affected Paul and then Thunder more than anything. Although the Rockets had to go through it, too. Don't get me wrong with the break. But listen, all the pressure in the world is on the Rockets. The Rockets had 22 turnovers. Westbrook and Harden combined for 12 of the 22. Your best players can't be playing that way. And I Harden had 32. I don't know how many shots he took. I don't have it here in front of me. All the pressure in the world is on James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Can you imagine the heat that Russell Westbrook's going to catch? He comes back and the Rockets lose two out of three and lose the series because he missed the first four games. And Chris Paul went to the Thunder. And then you know how much criticism the Rockets upper management ownership's going to get for trading away Chris Paul? Remember, the Rockets were up 3-2 against the Warriors a couple years back. And Paul, and we even joked about on the show, Paul's always a ticking time bomb. He's going to pull a hammy. And he did the very next night.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't play the last two games. And the Warriors won the series in seven. A healthy Chris Paul makes a gigantic difference. Now you got to hope Chris Paul doesn't, you know, I don't want to jinx him again by saying anything. Let's just hope he doesn't get hurt during game seven. And the winner gets the Lakers in round two, which good luck with that. I think the Lakers really aren't scared of either one of these teams. In fact, I think the Lakers would be more worried about Oklahoma City than Houston, to be honest, because, you know, Steven Adams can match up with Anthony Davis a little bit. You know, Paul's a tough matchup defensively. You know, I know Harden is too, but the Thunder play more defense than the Rockets typically, although the Rockets have played better defense at times during the playoffs, and Harden has stepped it up as well on the defensive end to give him credit and in fairness, because I've been critical of him and being the Olay defense. But Westbrook's
nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, exactly. and Westbrook's been a good defender in his career, although he gambles sometimes, but he turns it over more than he should. That's always been a problem for him. And he's not a good outside shooter. And that's why I didn't think it was a good fit with the Rockets at all. You know who would be the perfect guy for the Rockets? It'd be Westbrook traded for J.J. Redick. Seriously, the Rockets would be better with J.J. Redick than Russell Westbrook. Because I think Westbrook is a great player on the right team. But I don't think he's the right player on the Rockets at all. Because they live and die by the three. Harden drives, he's going to kick it. You're going to kick it out to Russell Westbrook for a 23-foot jumper? He's not good shooting the three. Never has been.
No.
He's a driver, a slasher, a mid-range guy. So I just never understood the fit. And I didn't think the Rockets were making the right move. I know they're getting a younger guy instead of an older guy who's had a few injuries here and there. But in regards to winning a championship, I just thought that was the wrong move. And we said it then, and I'll say it now. And even if the Rockets win this series and play the Lakers, I don't think they're getting by the Lakers anyway. So Westbrook didn't really help them go over the hump at all. But if they lose in the first round, that's where all you know what's going to break loose down in Houston. They might be some cleaning of the house. There might be some upper management people getting fired. I mean, how are fans going to feel about Westbrook? What are they going to say about James Harden? Hey, Harden, you forced Paul out. And now, look, Paul beat you. With who on his team? Steven Adams, good player, but a lot of people don't know him.
Yeah.
Gorgeous Alexander, is a really good young talent. You know, Gallinari is a really good player, really good, underrated. You know, but they don't have the star power that the Rockets do with Harden and Westbrook. I just think it'd be
Schroeder's
hilarious.
Come up with some pretty big shots here in the playoffs.
And when the Thunder picked him up as a backup last year for Westbrook, I thought that was a great pickup.
Yeah.
And he's one of the top six men in basketball. So, and he's streaky.
Definitely.
You know, but it'd be hilarious to me if the Thunder won Game 7.
Yeah,
Don't you think the Thunder are playing with house money on this one?
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Dude, we'll just go out loose as a goose, and there's no. And by the way, Houston doesn't get home court because it's in a bubble.
Yeah.
So that's gonna be interesting. The Jazz and the Nuggets, Game 7, in a bubble, no home court. The Nuggets don't have the home court they normally would. They're the higher seed. The Rockets don't get the home court they normally would, the higher seed. It'll be very interesting to see how these two game sevens shake out.
Definitely.
Man, I'm excited about it. I am. How about the Heat last night? Jimmy Butler, a playoff career high 40 points. Now, see, you can talk about the Thunder getting rid of guys like Westbrook and getting better. You know what? You can take the Rockets and compare them to the Philadelphia 76ers. The Rockets get rid of a winner in Chris Paul, and the Sixers get rid of they didn't re-sign Jimmy Butler, who played very well for them. And remember, it was a crazy 3 or 4 or 5 bounce three-pointer from the corner by Kawhi Leonard for the Raptors to beat the Sixers in Game 7 last year. The Sixers would have moved on. So the Sixers were very good last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Simmons got hurt. That didn't help. But they got rid of J.J. Redick. They didn't re-sign him. Great outside shooter. That hurt them. And then Jimmy Butler, he's a really good defender, and he's another offensive option, and they didn't re-sign him. So the Sixers made some serious moves and made the wrong ones, it appears, because Butler is absolutely flourishing in Miami. And he had 40 last night. He beat the Bucks. Bucks once again lose game one. Miami up 1-0. Of course, Bucks last time were down 1-0 to Orlando and came back and won the next four. Heat are a better team than Orlando by far.
Definitely.
So Bucks are down 1-0. Tonight, 4:30 on ESPN, Celtics-Raptors. Game two, Celtics dominated the game one. I'll be interested to see if the Raptors can bounce back. I expect a better effort from the Raptors tonight. And game seven tonight, 7:30 on ABC. That should be a good one. Jazz and Nuggets. Mitchell versus Murray. Jamal Murray of the Nuggets and Donovan Mitchell of the Jazz. Each one of them have had two 50-point games in this series. So what's the over-under? Mitchell and Murray combined points tonight. What's our over-under, 99?
Probably. I'm in Vegas to probably put it at like 96 or 97.
99.5.
Yeah. Yeah. Put it at 99.5 if you think both of them are going to score 50 again.
They might. You know what they might do? They might put it like 97, 96.5, like you said. One guy gets 50, the other guy gets 46.
And yeah.
You cover or don't cover. Man, that's going to be fun tonight. Who are you picking? Well, we both picked the Nuggets before the series began. I think one of us said 7 and one said 6. I don't remember for sure, but
yeah,
I know we picked the Nuggets.
We both picked the Nuggets. Yeah, I'll stick with it.
You think Nuggets going to finish it out?
Yeah.
I'll go with that, sure. Why not? I'm cheering for the Nuggets to win, although I like the Jazz too. I don't have any dog in the fight here. I mean, if the Thunder lose, I don't lose any sleep. It's not, you know, they're my NBA team, but
yeah.
I mean, it's different this year, and my teams that I live and die with, hypothetically, Royals and Chiefs. You know, and I know the Royals are no good, and the Chiefs are really awesome, and that's usually how it works. Chiefs, Royals are never awesome at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't want to have too much success in my life when it comes to my sports teams.
Mm-hmm.
Just not be too much to handle. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
I'd be cocky and arrogant and bragging to everybody, kind of like, you know, New York fans and Boston fans. And no shots out there at all. Okay, NHL playoffs continuing last night. Double overtime thriller, and that's one thing. I love overtime hockey.
Led back over to Shattenkirk, then on to Hedman. Moving on. Hit shot. He scores! Hedman wins it, and the Lightning move on to the conference final.
Now, there's something about hockey announcers, too. I like their energy, at least right there. I love that energy. That was good stuff. Lightning win in double overtime, win game 5 over the Bruins 3-2. They move on to the Eastern Conference Finals. The Avalanche stay alive. Yes, that's my hockey team. Until the Kraken come. Release the Kraken. Oh, wait a minute. They don't start till, what, is it next year or 2 years?
It's 2 years.
Oh, son of a gun.
21-22, I believe.
I've got to wait that long.
Yeah.
Son of a gun. Oh, well, Avalanche are my team. Go Avs. 6-3, Avs over Stars. Dallas Stars still lead that series over the Avs 3-2. Today it's the Islanders-Flyers. Islanders up 3-1, chance to close it out over the Philadelphia Flyers. The Golden Knights of Vegas up 3-1, trying to close out the Canucks. That's at 8:45 tonight on NBC Sports Network. Islanders-Flyers at 6 o'clock tonight. Yesterday, John Thompson passed away. We talked about all of the things that he accomplished at the University of Georgetown. He passed away at the age of 78 yesterday. And he was NBA on TNT crew. Inside NBA honored him with the iconic towel look. I thought that was pretty cool. If you saw that last night, that was very appropriate. The guys at Inside the NBA, that is just such a well-run show. There might be things you disagree with, but, you know, it's funny at times. If it can make my 14-year-old laugh when he's watching it and it can make me laugh, they're doing something.
Yes.
They're doing something. And they win awards, Emmy Awards for that show. And it is fun to watch. But they handle things right when they have to, and they goof around, they joke around, they mess around, they get serious, they even trade barbs at each other. And then when they have moments like they did the other day when they were talking about Jacob Blake situation in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which was very, I love how they just let each one of them talk about it and let them go for a little while, which was really good. All four of them on the panel, Barkley and Smith and Shaquille and Ernie Johnson, by the way, is unbelievably good at what he does as a studio host. And but the salute they did to John Thompson was really good, and you can pull that up and you can watch it if you missed it. It's all over social media. But we talked about John Thompson, the graduation rate, which is amazing because he had a lot of inner city kids and kids from poor neighborhoods, and obviously a lot of black youth, and they 97% graduation rate over his years as coach at Georgetown. That's insanely, unbelievably awesome. Because he, you know, I think sometimes coaches get caught up a lot into sports instead of what really does matter, and that is education. And John Thompson got that. He understood that. John Thompson's legacy is in stone. It's locked in. He won a national championship. He won a ton of games at Georgetown. I mean, it changed the face of college basketball. I remember back in 82, the first college basketball game I remember watching, and I would have been six. I remember CBS with the horrible graphics now. I can picture them. But I love the colors, and I love the logos they had. They'd have the big graphic, and it was the national championship game. It was the Georgetown Hoyas. I just love the dog with the little cap on. Mm-hmm. I just love that. And then they had the North Carolina Tar Heels. And my first game ever watching, a little did I know, I was watching the greatest player of all time, in my opinion, Michael Jordan, play in that game as a freshman. James Worthy was in that game, of course, and then Patrick Ewing for the Georgetown Hoyas. And you sit here and you think about it. Actually, Ewing, did he play in the 82 game? I'd have to look that up. I think he did. But I don't know. But anyway, 84 is when Georgetown won the national championship, okay? 85, they lost to Villanova, and Villanova played basically a perfect game. 66-64, Georgetown clearly was the better team. Had beaten Villanova three times during that season. But at one game, winner take all the pressure on the favorite. Georgetown was defending national champion. And Georgetown should have won at 85, but Villanova just was a Cinderella story, one of the best we've ever seen, with Raleigh Massimino. They could not miss from the floor and still barely beat Georgetown by two. But they played a team of familiarity with them, and that was Villanova, and they had nothing to lose. And Georgetown lost that in 85. In 82, they're a Fred Brown pass away from winning. Remember, he threw it to James Worthy, and he thought that it was his teammate. Of course, Michael Jordan was put on the map for the first time across the country when he hit the game-winning jumper from the baseline near the corner. Think about this for a second, and this is why I bring this up. John Thompson has an amazing legacy. He has won national championship in 1984. And listen, if you're a coach with a national championship, like, you know, Bill Self has won, John Calipari has won, and then, of course, there's some that have multiple titles. Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski, John Wooden, to name just a few, Bobby Knight, and others. But to win one is pretty. That's a very, very elite class, a very exclusive class to win one national title as a head basketball coach. What would John Thompson's legacy be? Do you think it would be any different had he won the other two? Because this is the fine line between winning titles and losing titles and difference between legacies and not legacies. The Buffalo Bills went to four straight Super Bowls. Had they won one, that whole narrative is different, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
If they just win one, they go 1-3, people still say, well, what if? What about the Braves? They were so good back in with Glavine and Maddox and Smoltz. Remember that? And every year they'd win that division, and then they'd just flame out in the playoffs. And they won one title in a shortened season. What if the Braves could have, you know, put that together? What if Jordan wouldn't have retired that first time? Would the Bulls have won eight titles in a row? You can say this ifs, ands, or whatever. The Bulls, of course, went 6-0 in the NBA Finals, so you can't say what if in regards to what if they would have won that one. The Patriots, we've mentioned this before, they're 6-3 with Tom Brady as their quarterback in the Super Bowl. They could easily be 0-9. They could easily be 9-0. They could easily be 4-5, 3-6. Every one of their Super Bowls is extremely close. John Thompson, in 1982, if Fred Brown doesn't pass it to James Worthy, he may win a national championship. In 19, 84, he does win the title over Phi Slamma Jamma in Houston. 1985, he has to face a team for a fourth time. Winner take all the pressure on his squad, and Villanova plays a nearly perfect game. What did they shoot from the floor in that game? 80%? I can't remember what
ridiculous.
It was.
I don't remember what it was.
Might pull that up real quick. Villanova shot lights out. It was insane, like 70-some percent maybe. And they still only won by two. And I don't think that's John Thompson's fault they lost to Villanova. Maybe some people think that. I don't think it's John Thompson's fault they lost to Dean Smith in 1982. Dean Smith was a coach that could never get over the hump. In 1982, all the talk was Dean Smith can't win the big one. And then Dean Smith won a few. That was his first one. You know, Dean Smith, think about this for a second. You want to talk about Dean Smith, John Thompson. By the way, they were really good friends. And, of course, Dean Smith played at the University of Kansas, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And a big reason why Roy Williams went to Kansas and then, of course, went to Carolina was because of Dean Smith in both cases. Dean Smith couldn't win a title until 1982. Think about Dean Smith. How many titles did Dean Smith win? Is it two? Here, I'll look that up.
I think it was just two. I say just two.
I think it's just two. Let's see. Yes. Okay. So, along my point here, by the way, you get Villanova?
Villanova shot 22 of 28 from the floor, 79%. 22 of 27 from the free throw line, 82%.
They shot
79
almost 80% yeah. for a whole game and won by two.
Yeah.
Do you know who the better team was?
Yeah.
It was clearly Georgetown. You shoot 80% in a game, you should win by double digits at least, if not by 20 or more. It took Villanova to shoot 80% from the floor to beat Georgetown in 1985. It took a guy on his team to pass to the wrong guy, and it was a fluke play. James Worthy was so late getting back on defense, all of a sudden he stopped. It was complete fluke play we've never seen before. John Thompson was denied two national championships because of the weirdest things. You have to say John Thompson was a little bit unlucky when it comes to winning titles. He only won one. Think about Dean Smith for a moment. Because I ask you, would the narrative be different for John Thompson had he won three national championships? I think the answer would be yes. What about Dean Smith? Dean Smith could never win a title till 1982. He won in 82 because he had a freshman, Michael Jordan, hit a game-winning shot. He also, because Fred Brown threw the ball to James Worthy, who, of course, was on the wrong team for Georgetown. And so Dean Smith benefited from a wild and wacky play in 82 to win the title, his first ever. 11 years later, 1993, what's that national championship game known for?
Timeout.
The infamous timeout by Chris Webber when they didn't have one, and that ended the game.
Yeah.
Now, Carolina may still won that game,
mm-hmm.
but that completely sealed the deal for Carolina. So Dean Smith and John Thompson. Dean Smith won two national championships. John Thompson won one. Dean Smith's two titles happened or associated with two extremely fluky things. A guy calling a timeout they didn't have late in the final seconds against Michigan in 93, and a guy on his team that didn't get back on defense and then stopped for some reason at that spot, and Fred Brown threw it to him for Georgetown to North Carolina. You don't think there's luck involved in winning championships?
No, absolutely there is.
John Thompson could easily have three, and Dean Smith could have zero. And would there be as much talk about Dean Smith being an unbelievable coach if he didn't win a title? Of course not. Would
you got to get at least one of them to get
yeah.
there.
I mean, he would still be respected.
Yeah.
But not in the way he was if he never won a title. He'd be considered a guy that never won one. Peyton Manning was knocked by that forever. He can't win the big game.
Yes.
Tony Dungy, same way. And then all of a sudden they won one. And he won one in Denver, although mostly because of the defense. But he still has two rings. You know, you could sit and go, what if Peyton Manning had a defense in Indianapolis? You can say, what if Marty Schottenheimer had a guy that would listen to him for the San Diego Chargers and take a knee when he intercepts a pass against Tom Brady and the Patriots that sealed the deal for a 14-2 team, and then Marty was fired a week later? Because upper management didn't get along. What if Marty Schottenheimer would have started Rich Gannon to Urvis Gerbach in the playoffs? What if the Chiefs would have had a better kicker in Lynn Elliott? Both those seasons, by the way, I'm referring to the Chiefs 95-97, they were 13-3. Marty Schottenheimer is a great coach, but not considered like others because he never won one.
Yeah.
I mean, and you talk about a guy with bad luck, the fumble and the drive against a guy called John Elway, who's a Hall of Famer. Some people just don't have that luck. Like, they're great coaches or good coaches, and then they get so close, and then weird and crazy and wacky things happen to them. How about Sean Payton and New Orleans Saints? The last 3 years, they've lost on the last play of the game in the playoffs. Took the Minneapolis Miracle. last year, well, of course, the phantom, the interference that wasn't called 2 years ago. Last year, it was really a push-off probably in the end zone by Rudolph. You could have called. They didn't. That won the game. The Saints could have had three Super Bowl appearances the last 3 years, and they got ousted in the weirdest of waves there. Mm-hmm. And Drew Brees only has one Super Bowl, which is still, I say only one. He has won one Super Bowl. He could easily have two, three, four. It takes tons of luck. You know, we talk about the luck that the Royals had in 15, and they had a lot of luck in 14, and it ran out when Bumgarner squashed that luck. In 15, they had a lot of luck in the playoffs. The Chiefs had a lot of luck. Think about the Chiefs' luck last year. Mahomes doesn't go down with a season-ending injury. That was the biggest luck of them all.
Oh, yeah.
That, and most players don't come back 3 weeks later. It just doesn't happen. All right? The Chiefs got lucky that the Patriots lost to the Dolphins the final week of the season to get a first-round bye. The Chiefs got lucky when the Houston Texan coach Bill O'Brien had 4th and inches and could have put the foot to the throat and ended the Chiefs and settled for a field goal and then ran a fake punt. I mean, you take luck. It's really amazing. I wasn't planning on talking about that, but when you look at John Thompson's legacy, how much different would it look like with 3 titles instead of 1 or even 2 instead of 1? What would Dean Smith's legacy look like if those 2 fluky things don't happen? He might not win a national title. What if Memphis doesn't miss their free throws? Bill Self doesn't have any national titles. Mm-hmm. Or you could argue, Bill Self, what if KU, and just talk about KU, not Bill Self, what if KU makes their free throws in 2003? They missed a ton against Syracuse. Roy Williams have another title. Mm. And maybe he doesn't leave Kansas.
Has his first title.
That would have been his first title, and maybe he doesn't leave Kansas. If Kansas beats Syracuse in 03, do you think Roy Williams leaves to go to Carolina after winning a national title?
That's tough to do.
I know it would be. You know,
I don't like dealing in hypotheticals, and I definitely don't like dealing in that one because that's tough.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's there for you. You didn't think it was going to come around a second time.
Right.
And
there have been people.
You just won a national championship.
There have been people that said that Bill Self, had he not won a title in 08, there'd be so much heat on him since he would not have won a title that he might have already been gone and maybe to Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
There's people that believe that might have happened. Although it's been 12 years since he won a title, and people are getting a little antsy. Of course, last year had a great chance, and then everything got pulled from. There's unluck. There's a lot of bad luck.
Yeah.
You look at Bill Self, some of the bad luck he's had. Michigan Trey Burke hitting a 30-foot three to beat you when you controlled that game and could easily, they were a title contender as a 1 seed that year. You look at VCU got hot, made a ton of threes, and KU was 2 of 21 for 3 in that game. Okay? There's all kinds of bad luck that Bill Self's had. Mm-hmm. And then probably the ultimate, biggest stroke of bad luck was now you got the #1 team in the country. You appear to be clearly the best team, which KU probably would have been upset for all we know, but hypothetically we don't, like you said. But he had a great chance to win another title, and he didn't even get a chance at it because of COVID-19. So Bill Self's won 1 title. That's great. But is his legacy going to be the same if he doesn't win another title for the rest of his career, or would it be enhanced if he won a couple? Absolutely, it'd be enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what builds your legacy. Mike Krzyzewski is considered one of the greatest coaches of all time, if not the greatest, in college basketball because he's won, what, 5 titles?
Yeah, he's...
And John Wooden's considered the best of all time because he's won... 11. Why is Tom Brady considered the greatest quarterback of all time by many people? Because he has more Super Bowl rings than any other quarterback in NFL history. Yeah, he lost 3, but he's been to 9. He's 6-3. LeBron James catches heat because he's 3-6 in the NBA Finals. But if Tom Brady's 3-6, would he catch heat? Probably not. But LeBron was the #1 overall pick, and he was anointed the chosen one when he was 16. Whereas Tom Brady was a 6th-round draft pick.
Yeah.
See the differences in perspectives?
Yeah. For sure.
You know? It's the expectations.
A guy like John Thompson is helped out by the fact that, you know, he was a minority that came in and was the first guy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, when you make 3 national championships in 4 years, that's going to help your legacy. Whether you win or lose those in college basketball.
Right.
You know, you're there 82, 84, 85, you're in the championship game.
Yeah, that helps.
And that'll help. And obviously the 1's going to help. I'm not saying that if he would have got another 1, it wouldn't help even more.
Oh, sure.
Because it would. But John Thompson's legacy is pretty firm for a lot of reasons other than just winning. And some people don't get afforded that luxury of being able to play in 3 national championships in 4 years and also being the first guy in your minority race to be able to do that. And that helped him. I'm not saying that in a disparaging way or anything. I'm just saying it did.
Right.
You know, at the time, it was a pretty big deal. And that grows into him being one of the best coaches that has ever been out there, honestly. And, yeah, I mean, for everybody, if the more championships you win, the more it's going to help your legacy. There's no question.
The 84 team, Georgetown, went 34-3, won the national title over Houston. And the Georgetown team in 1985 went 35-3 and then lost, of course, in the final to Villanova in the huge upset. So just a really amazing career that John Thompson had. 596 wins, won 71% of his games. He played in the very difficult Big East, winning percentage 64% in the Big East, and made the NCAA tournament quite a few times, the Elite Eight quite a few times, and, of course, three national championship game appearances and one national title back in 1984. It is interesting. You need a little bit of luck to win, and sometimes it takes bad luck to lose, and that affects one's legacy. Whether that's fair or not, that's up to you to decide. It's the first day of September. Don't forget our locker room chats tomorrow and Thursday. We'll have volleyball video streaming Thursday with Beloit, nckssports.com, and then football on both stations, Osborne hosting Hill City, and video stream Beloit at Republic County on Friday as we really get going when it comes to high school sports here in this upcoming season underway for a few sports already. A lot of volleyball tonight. The full schedule and information available to you at nckssports.com.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.